feel like we could just talk about this for days.
Oh, absolutely. I feel like that's true of, like, a lot of the cults we do, but this one especially.
And what is this cult we're doing, people? It's Scientology Part 2.
Oh, yes.
We talked about the disappearance of Shelley Miscavige. Mm-hmm. And you might wonder, what do they do with Scientology members who displease them?
Well, you could not have asked that in a creepier way.
Yep. I can be very creepy. I told you, this is our cult. Our notable craziness.
Oh my god. It's all notable craziness.
You say that every time.
I say that about this one.
And we're going to talk about The Hole and Sea Org.
And the Commodore's Messenger Organization.
Now, let's start with Sea Org, because I believe the Commodore's is connected to Sea Org.
It is. Yeah. It's a subunit.
Now, the Scientologists, as we spoke about in our last episode, are all trying to become operating thetans, which is OT. And an OT is trying to rise to the levels of OTs and be like an OT1, an OT2, an OT3, all with the goal of being declared clear and, like, clear of all nonsense and reaching their true spiritual.
Do we know how many Scientologists, like, get clear, or like how often that happens, how long that takes?
I honestly don't know, but I know people work on it their whole lives, and I think it's different for everybody, and it depends on how famous you are, how much money you give, and, you know,
of course,
typical stuff.
Sure Okay.
But because of this, Hubbard, our dude here, developed higher levels of training in the Sea Org. He felt it would let people, the OTs, rise through the ranks and learn more about their thetans.
It's like a paramilitary group.
Yep.
Oh, it's so creepy.
It's called a paramilitary group. It's also been called a private naval force. The people who have been in it call it a totalitarian organization marked by intense surveillance and a lack of freedom.
That's good.
They have,
I like how every ex-member, like, there's no casual ex-member.
No, it's, oh my god, like, oh my god, oh my god.
This is horrifying. I'm lucky I escaped with my life.
Absolutely. It says here that they initially boarded on 4 ships, the Diana, the Athena, the Apollo, and Excalibur.
I like that.
I don't like that they didn't pick a cohesive theme, because Diana is Roman, Athena and Apollo are Greek, and Excalibur is from Arthurian legend.
Yes. Well, I mean, but I think they're all dope names. But
they are dope, they just don't match.
I would have liked a theme. I would have liked to see some organization.
Come on, you organize everything else, Elrond.
Elrond. And Apollo was definitely the flagship for that. That's where
it was.
Elrond lived.
And that was in 1967. I don't know how many ships they have today, but those were the 4 that they started with. It's a very interesting culture. They say it's an idealized version of L. Ron Hubbard's naval time. The members wear, like, Navy uniforms, and they address everybody as sir, regardless of gender. I'm sorry, my tongue is tripping over itself. They are also forced, when they join Sea Org, to sign a billion-year contract with the church, which means they can't leave the church for a billion years.
Okay.
Because they believe in reincarnation, that's just over and over and over again.
Jesus Christ.
In exchange...
How do you know that, though? How do you know when you're a baby, you're just like, oh, sorry, parents, I realize you're Catholic, but I actually am a Scientologist, I signed a contract. It's a lot of paperwork, and I realize I'm just an infant, but
I guess they
can't
believe...
get all caught up in the red tape, so...
I guess they believe that if you're so dedicated, you'll just know instinctively and be magic and baby superpowers.
That is very stupid. Their motto is Revenimus, which means we come back.
Is that a real language?
That's Latin.
Oh, I was going to say that sounds fake.
Isn't it?
It looks Latin, but I'm not sure.
And it's so vaguely threatening.
Yep. The Sea Org members are also under strict discipline. They are not allowed to have premarital sex. They are not allowed to marry anyone outside of the Sea Org organization. I know they're just saying Sea Organization, but that's just what I'm saying. They work long hours, on average at least 100 hours a week. And
oh, God.
They live in communal housing aboard the ships. They often wear rags. Nobody gives them a lot of clothes.
And if they want to raise kids...
Mm-hmm.
They have to, like, leave Sea Org.
They do, until the kid is 6, and then the kid is raised communally on one of the boats, and their parents don't really get to see them. As of 2009, there were about 5,000 church members in Sea Org.
And I just want to point out that when we say Sea Org, it's, like, S-E-A, like the ocean.
Yes.
Because when you first said it, I thought it was like sea, like
the water. Oh, no. Sea like the ocean. And the thing is, they try to pump it up, but being sent to Sea Org is often a punishment.
Really?
Because you weren't doing well at one of these stationary organizations, or you questioned the church, or you were in contact with suppressive persons. I don't know if we talked about that in the last one.
We didn't. Is that anyone who's not a Scientologist?
Yes, anyone who's not a Scientologist or points out how crazy Scientology is becomes a suppressive person and you have to cut off all contact with them.
Of course.
So doing anything like that gets you sent to the Sea Org to be sort of re-educated.
Mm-hmm. Do we know how long people want, like, stay in the Sea Org?
Indefinitely.
Oh, jeez.
Indefinitely. And they have an 18-point code and pledge. So they don't really care about personal hygiene and grooming. They'll often work 12 or more hours a day scrubbing the floor, fixing the boat. When it was first started, L. Ron Hubbard would just talk about how working together they would make this great, but he would sit in his room in his admiral's outfit all day and then just join them for dinner.
That's so Jim Jonesy.
You know what it reminds me of? When we were in band, when we were in fourth grade, We had this teacher who I'm not going to name, but at the end of class, we'd have to clean up all the instruments and all the chairs and stands and stuff, and he would stand in the middle of the room and say, "Many hands make light work, many hands make light work," and he would just stand there and not help. So what I'm saying was he was a cult leader.
Can I just do some numbers super quick?
Absolutely.
So in 2009, there's about 5,000 members of Sea Org, Most of whom reside around LA, Copenhagen, London, and Sydney, with some at smaller centers. Mm-hmm. But those are like the heavy hitters.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they've really sort of...
It's very interesting to me.
They have like a cruise ship.
I know, but it's not a nice cruise ship.
But it's, like, staffed by the Sea Org people, which is so, like...
To bring up BoJack Horseman again.
Oh, no.
They have... I don't think you've seen this episode, but they have this whole plot line where the character that Aaron Paul plays gets really into improv, and improv becomes, like, a cult, but they're using it as a stand-in for Scientology, and they have a joke that's like, just to be clear, this story is about improv. And he has to go work on a cruise ship where it's, like, all staffed by all these improv cult members.
Oh,
and
no.
They all have different levels, and it's so funny.
This reminds me of you and speech team in high school.
Absolutely. That was the biggest cult I've ever seen.
That was the biggest cult you've been a part of.
So, I'm sorry. What were your other numbers there?
No, that was it.
Well, and
was just the one number of 5,000.
It's very interesting to me because I always thought of this as, like, a very American cult just because it started and so centered around Hollywood and stuff. But it's international.
Yeah.
And it's very strange to me.
I feel like this is the kind of cult, although I don't know, I was going to say this is the kind of cult that only could have started in America, but
as we've seen,
realism started in France, and that's fucking bonkers.
Shinrikyo started in Japan.
Well, no, I know, but yeah. I mean, this like, belief cult, this what they actually believe, the actual religion behind it, is just wild to me.
So, and then I want to talk a little bit more about these people who were sent to Sea Org for Rehabilitation Project Force.
Uh-oh.
I'm trying to find, there's someone named Melton, I can't find his name, his first name on here. He was an ex-member. But he said that it was created in 1974 as a system of work camps. Every time you hear work camps, run.
Sea Org was?
No, the Rehabilitation Project Force. There's so many acronyms I lose track.
Yes, that's why. Okay, yes.
Which again is for these people who didn't live up to the church's expectations, had violated policies, whatever. They worked 6 days a week. There's someone named Gary Armstrong who was sent there for 2 years for punishment. And he said, I'm going to read you his whole thing there. It's long, but oh my God. It was essentially a prison to which crew were considered non-producers, security risks, or just wanted to leave the Sea Org were assigned. Hubbard's RPF policies established the conditions. They were segregated and not allowed to communicate with anyone else. They had their own spaces and were not allowed in normal crew areas of the ship. They ate after the normal crew had eaten and only whatever was left over. Their berthing was the worst on board in a roach-infested, filthy, and unventilated cargo hold.
Their berthing is, like, where they live.
Yes, that's what they call, like, these little group living areas. They wore black boiler suits, even in the hottest weather. They were required to run everywhere. Discipline was harsh and bizarre, with running laps on the ship assigned for the slightest infraction, like failing to address a senior with sir. Work was hard enough, and the schedule rigid, with 7 hours sleep time from lights out to lights on, short meal breaks, no liberties, and no free time. When one young woman ordered into the RPF took an assignment too lightly, Hubbard created the RPF's RPF and assigned her to it, an even more degrading experience, cut off from even the RPF, kept under guard, forced to clean the ship's bilges, and allowed even less sleep.
Jesus Christ.
So this was torture. And this is one of those things where I was saying, I hope to God that Shelley Miskovich had died rather than have to go through this.
This is so fucked up.
So fucked up.
Can I talk about the Commodore's Messenger?
Do it. Okay. So that's another part. That's another sub-organization like the RPF within Sea Org, yes. But not as terrible, hopefully. We'll see. I said that very dubiously.
The Commodore's Messenger organization, the CMO, it's a subunit within Sea Org, as we said. And so the members of the CMO, they communicate and enforce the policies of the Religious Technology Center, which is the RTC. Ugh. And what they do is, that was started in 1982, the RTC, and it just kind of, it oversees the use of the trademarks, symbols, and texts of Scientology and Dianetics. So it's like the literature.
Mm-hmm.
The Commodore's, the CMO.
Which is where Shelley Miskovich became.
Got her start.
The Golden Girl.
So it started in 1968. Well, L. Ron was living on the Apollo.
Mm-hmm.
And these messengers were his personal administrative assistants. And they operated solely under his direction so that the Scientology
so
management was
gross.
Like pure.
So gross.
So there was originally four messengers. Janice Gillum, age 11. Terry Gillum, age 12. Annie Tidman, age 12, and Suzette Hubbard, age 13, who was
that
later...
his daughter? I mixed up
sounds
all my
like
pronouns
it.
There.
I think so.
Yeah.
And then Suzette was later replaced by Claire Popham, age 13. So
I'm like rocking back and forth.
I know, you
in
look
terror.
You look very upset. In 75, while they were sailing in the Caribbean, it was like very hot and humid,
yeah.
As you would expect.
It's the Caribbean.
So the messengers picked their own uniforms. White shorts, tie tops, and platform shoes with knee-high socks. And they were trained to mimic Hubbard's exact tone and mannerisms.
That's the strangest thing I've ever heard.
Do you want to hear something stranger?
Yeah.
You have crazy eyes right now.
I'm so scared.
I know. You should be. So someone asked Hubbard, hey, why did you want all these young girls to be your messengers?
Oh, God. Here
and
it comes.
Quote... Hitler was a madman, but nevertheless a genius in his own right. And the Nazi youth was one of the smartest ideas he had. With young people, you had a blank slate. Yeah. Your jaw has dropped to the floor.
Dude!
He also said that he picked girls over boys because women are more loyal than men. Which is, like, fair. But,
true.
But how fucked up is that?
I can't even.
How fucked up is that? That's the Commodore's Messenger organization. Just some young girls in thigh highs and short shorts and platform shoes. Just
do you think they're still like that?
Spreading the word of the Lord
of Zeno.
L. Ron Hubbard.
Do you think they still have them like that?
I don't know. It says it talks about it in like current tense.
And that's
so.
That's like a good thing, right? It's like prestigious.
Oh yeah. No, yeah. It's like being the altar boy.
Oh my God. Being an altar boy is not prestigious.
Reminds me of my dad. My dad, his mom once signed him up when he was like 8,
yeah,
to be an altar boy. He's like, what the fuck? Like, I didn't want this. And he was telling me about how he had to like carry a candle and he,
yeah,
had this one long strand of blonde hair coming out the front of his head. So he's like playing with the candle in his hair and it burns up and it just like hits his forehead. He's like, damn it!
Oh my God.
In church.
Oh my God. I had a lot of cousins, both boys and girls, who were altar children. I was not. I was a reader.
You were...
I would go up and say, a reading from the Corinthians to Paul. We have received your letter. Stop talking to us.
Stop.
I'm kidding.
I hope sister as well. Stop.
That's a Catholic joke right there, where the Corinthians finally answer Paul. Anyway, back to the cults we were talking about. We are now going to our final part of the notable craziness of their organizations, which is the whole.
Oh, my Lord.
Which is about as good as it sounds. The Hole is the unofficial nickname for the Church of Scientology's base in Riverside County, California. It's in the town of Hemet. Dozens of its senior executives, and I'm reading straight from Wikipedia for this paragraph, and I apologize. Dozens of its senior executives have reportedly been confined within the building for months or years. It consists of a set of double-wide trailers within a Scientology compound, and they sort of joined together to make a suite of offices that were formerly used by the church's international management team. People who have been in this church describe it as a place of confinement, humiliation, demanding degradation. They would beat people up. People had to crawl around. Trash was overflowing. Plumbing often didn't work. The Church of Scientology, by the way, claims that the hole does not exist. But right now I am looking at a satellite image picture of it.
It's just so scary. They just are so mysterious, I guess.
And it's on the Gold base, which is a larger Scientology base. If you read about life on the hole, this is the part in the documentary that always makes me feel sick. The number of people confined to the hole between 2004 and 2007 increased from 40 to over 100. They slept in cots and sleeping bags. They slept on desktops because this was an office. They'd sleep on conference tables and cubicles. There was barely any room to move. One ex-prisoner here said that you only had about 6 inches on either side, above you, below you. They were only allowed to leave the building to be taken to shower as a group or to attend church events. Food was brought to them on golf carts, and they were only given 10 to 15 minutes to eat. As they said for the RPF on Sea Org, they got the leftover food that was just horrible and undercooked and like the scraps. The building was infested with ants. The electricity was on and off and spotty, and the temperatures, because it was Southern Florida, often reached
Florida.
Southern California reached 106 degrees Fahrenheit, and there was no air conditioning.
There is a bladed fence surrounding the Gold base. I'm looking at a photo of it. Look at this. How fucked up is that? It's just giant fucking razor blades.
That looks like something out of a video game.
And apparently Tom DeVocht or something, I'm just really giving that a fun spin on that name. He scaled it in 2005 to escape from the Gold base.
Oh my gosh.
How nuts is that?
There's just this whole thing where they, it was sort of like extreme auditing where they had to have group confessions. They would stand in trash cans and they would...
That's so right. Symbolic.
It really is. And would confess supposed transgressions, bad thoughts about Miscavige or the church, just close sexual fantasies. And they say that they would, like, ride you for so long, you would just start spitting out stuff you hadn't even done.
Oh, I completely believe it.
Yeah, it's like a psychological thing.
You can't take a confession under...
Duress.
Yes.
They would say that they'd had an affair, they stole money, or they killed somebody. They would just start dreaming up bullshit. And people would punch you and scream and yell.
I wonder what the psychology is behind that. Are you just... You're so distressed that, like... You're just trying to get it to stop, so you're trying to tell them anything they want to hear.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
And it's confession under duress, which is why...
It used to be
like, officers of the law would beat the shit out of somebody and be like, all right, yeah, I did that. And then the court's like, you can't say that. He just said that so you'd stop hitting him. DeVocht, I'm looking at the same guy you did.
Yeah.
Said that people had to write apology and announcements, and, like, I recognize very clearly how treasonous I have been towards you, Miscavige, and Scientology. He said it reminded him of North Korean POW write-ups, which are just, you know, the very brainwashed thing. And you can't walk out physically because of all the spikes and stuff, but also because you're under guard, and because you don't have anyone left. You've cut yourself off from the whole world, and you still got stuck in this place. And you have no one to get you out.
The terrifying thing about this cult is that they turn you from the world, and then you're like, fuck me, what did I do? I'm trapped. I can read you the story fast of Debbie Cook, who was in the hole. 7 weeks she was there.
Over almost 2 months. I can't even imagine.
So she gets sent to Clearwater, Florida to organize a major, which I think is one of their, like, bases.
Mm-hmm.
She's organizing a major public event involving David Miscavige. So she's driven to downtown Clearwater with another staff member and her husband to eat at the church dining hall. And so the couple takes the opportunity to run from the church. When that staff member goes inside to get food, she jumps into the driver's seat. She and her husband drive to a car rental place, and they hire a car to drive to her dad's house in North Carolina. But before they get there, the fucking church official is like, hey, buddy, like, let's not do that. And so they return to Clearwater, and she's under guard for 3 weeks. And she writes a letter to her mom saying, if she's not released, she will, quote, take whatever steps are necessary, like slitting my wrists. But then she signs a severance agreement, which I guess she is allowed to leave. She later said that by that point, quote, I would have signed that I stabbed babies over and over again and loved it. How is this allowed? This has to be a terrorist organization.
That's the thing, and that's why everyone's so mad that they were given religious, like,
exemption.
But also because if you say something is a religion, you can do almost anything.
Yes, but here's the thing. I feel like the reason the U.S. government hasn't stepped in is because they haven't, like, attacked groups of people.
Because,
like, these are all members of their religion. I know, but they are abusing.
Being, yeah, it's just so but gross. And, like, they remind me a lot of the North Korean regime, in which they will flat out deny things that everyone can
knows
see.
To be true.
Yes, well, I want to read you this right here. It said, in 2006, several executives escaped and were caught. That's what they call the prisoners, executives. What I think is really messed up because it's an office.
Jesus.
And security was tightened. John Brousseau, who I believe worked for Scientology, said that he was ordered to fasten steel bars across the doors and the windows so they could only be opened a few inches, but another staff member objected, saying that an outsider could see the bars. And they denied bars were ever installed, and any allegation of bars being installed to hold people against their will is false and malicious and is denied.
It's just so... it's like the stuff of nightmares.
And when you speak out against Scientology, they will get you.
They will fuck you up.
They have an amazing amount of lawyers.
Yeah. According to Lawrence Wright, who wrote the Going Clear book, the Riverside County Sheriff's Office has never received a complaint from someone at the base about their treatment there.
Yeah.
Despite the many accounts of mistreatment, which probably has a lot to do with the fear that many Scientologists have of bringing shame upon Scientology and of being forced to break off contact with their family and friends. So everyone is scared into submission by David Miscavige, who fucking beats the executives, excuse me.
So I would like to talk a little bit about Paulette Cooper here. I found her name. It was called Operation Freakout.
Oh, Jesus. That's still better than Operation Snatch.
Absolutely. It was a Church of Scientology covert plan. They were going to have Paulette Cooper imprisoned or committed to a psychiatric hospital because she wrote a lot of articles that eventually became a book in 1971 called The Scandal of Scientology.
Was she a former member?
No, she was just a freelance journalist and author who was, you know, spotlighting it, getting to the truth. The FBI discovered evidence of this plot and the preceding campaign of harassment, which led the church to compensate Cooper in an out-of-court settlement.
How did no one go to jail for that?
Yep. So she wrote The Scandal of Scientology, and they sued her in 1971 for libel. Yeah. And they demanded $300,000, which was a lot of money back then, for untrue, libelous, and defamatory...
defamatory
statements about the church. She was seen as a very high priority target from the church. They wrote letters to everyone in her building that told them she had an STD.
Oh, Jesus.
She received anonymous death threats. They painted her name and phone number on street walls so she would receive obscene phone calls. They subscribed to pornographic mailing lists. A Scientologist who said she was soliciting funds for the United Farm Workers got into Cooper's apartment, stole her stationery, and wrote two anonymous bomb threats to the Church of Scientology. Then Cooper was indicted for making bomb threats and arraigned, and the stationery had been marked with the threats had been on her stationery and marked with her fingerprints. And the charges were eventually dropped in 1995. But it was not until the fall of 1977, so she had been dealing with this for 6 years, that the FBI realized they had been staged by Scientology, and they gave her some money, but that was...
You do not want to get on the wrong side of Scientology.
They scare me so much. Like, honestly, they are something from science fiction. Like, they're so ahead. And I'm terrified they're going to hurt us after we publish this.
We're going to die once this goes up. If Hallie and I ever get mysteriously killed, look at the this. Scientologists first.
Yes, and then my sister, and then back at the Scientologists.
Your sister's probably a Scientologist.
She's pretty easy to brainwash. So this sort of is our where are they now. They're still running. Shelley Miskovich is still missing. And the thing that only ever calms me down is, again, talking to Liz, she said that they're not as powerful as they used to be, just sort of because all this information has come out about them.
I feel like, in that same vein, yep. They remind me of North Korea in that they're all bark and no bite.
Yeah.
Well, although they do have more of a bite than North Korea, they're just they have a very loud bark, I think.
Yeah, and it really scares everybody. And poor Paulette Cooper.
That is a fucking nightmare.
What a brave lady.
What's she up to these days?
She's pretty old now. Oh my God.
What?
She was born to parents who died in Auschwitz.
Oh, Jesus.
What a fucking life she's had to deal with. So does that mean she was born in a concentration camp?
Maybe. Depends on how old she was.
Good Lord. Anyway.
So that's the heavy hitter.
And she's married and she went to Harvard, and I hope she has a long and nice life.
That was really fucked up. It starts off so nicely and it just
improve yourself.
Yeah. It's just some casual self-help. And then it's so not casual and it is not self-help.
Jesus
You look
Christ
exhausted.
I am. I talked for so long. I'm sorry. I kept interrupting you.
No. This is like one of the cults that we could talk about forever, I think. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll revisit it
someday.
In a later episode.
Once we redo Om Shinrikyo.
Yeah.
Any recommendations?
I'm going to go see Drunk Shakespeare tonight.
Sounds fun.
It's going to be good.
I recommend BoJack Horseman.
Yeah.
Talking about it made me think of it. It's super funny. And once you get past the weird premise that half of them are animals and half of them are humans.
And they all have human hands.
And no one has a tail. Have you noticed that? Even though they should.
That show is so weird.
It's very funny, though, and it's a lot of dark comedy. A lot of, like, very honest stuff about depression.
We're really into the dark comedies about depression.
I love Will Arnett. When I was a freshman...
Oh my god, Hallie. Hallie would start a cult around Will Arnett.
I would not, but when I was... when we were freshmen in college...
Yep.
I was really stressed out about starting college, and for a weird coping mechanism, I watched everything Will Arnett had ever been in.
Yep.
And BoJack Horseman had coincidentally just come out then, and it always holds a very special place in my heart.
Yep.
So that's my recommendation. Jesus Christ, we need a nap. Be excellent to each other.
And be careful, it's a jungle out there.